This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on May 20th in the year 2013. Tonight's guest is a serial repeat guest, Glenn Block, who's still working for Microsoft as a PM, who I believe, Glenn, you're still trying to make Azure and Windows a better place for Node.js.
I am, but I am also now working on this new service that we launched last summer, Azure Mobile Services, and I have moved on from doing our command line stuff. So I was working on our command line tools for PowerShell and cross-platform tools, which were written in Node and our Node SDK. And now I've left the command line tools. My coworker Guang Yang is working on those, and I've been doing some stuff on Azure Mobile Services. But I still own the Node SDK and our Node story in Azure. So yes, I'm still trying to make it a better place.
Very good. So there's like three or four more shows we could do with you.
I am because serial. I don't know how to take that, though. You said I'm a serial guest. Is that like here we have Glenn Block again?
Or... No, it's a good thing. You're always into something interesting. And that's why tonight's episode doesn't cover anything that we've talked about yet.
That is it's true.
Talking about script CS.
Wait, I thought we were just going to pick up where we were in how Glenn got started in computing.
You know, ever since that episode, every time I do a podcast, I'm like, what I'm not going to do is give you the history of computing. So that has gone down in the archives as a historical moment.
Well, anyway. Tonight's topic, if we can stay on topic, is ScriptCS. For those people that haven't been to ScriptCS.net and seen what this project is, can you give us a quick description?
Yes, quick. ScriptCS is really just another way to write C# code outside of the IDE as script files. And so it's trying to really, I've been working with Node for like the last 2 years, and ScriptCS, at least my involvement with it, and I kind of kicked it off and got the project started, was really to say, has the technology progressed enough that we can bring a very light workflow similar to what I have with Node.js development to C#? And I looked and saw that all the pieces were there, that we have Roslyn, which is a new technology that allows you to write C# script. And that means you don't even need a class file. You can just write loose .NET code. And then we had NuGet, which is a great package manager, and so many proliferation of so many frameworks that are available through NuGet. So I looked at both of those and kind of just connected the dots. And I was like, well, what if we had a really simple way to just write C# apps as script and take in the ability to use NuGet packages and do all of this outside the IDE? And then I added in a little bit of magic around conventions, like, hey, if this NuGet package is present, just load it. I don't have to ask you to load it. It's like convention over configuration, some Rails-ish type ideas. And lo and behold, this thing was born called ScriptCS, and threw it out there in a very early form. When I first threw it out there, we didn't even have the ability to do like includes. It was just one file. And, you know, it struck a nerve. A whole bunch of people were saying, yeah, there's plenty of times when I just want to write some C# code and I don't really need an IDE. I don't want to even create a project. I just want a place to just quickly write some code. And that's what ScriptCS really is.
Yeah, so you have some really interesting abilities inside of here. You can, for instance, reference assemblies using a /r directive.
Actually, it's even better than that. So the /r is for GACT assemblies, like WPF or things installed on the machine. Mm-hmm. But going with the convention model, if you just drop a binary in, like any binary, into the folder, it will just load it. It really takes the prints into the bin folder. It really takes this principle of it's present, so I want it, rather than having to be explicit. But yes, you can use /r. Primarily, it's used for GACT assemblies.
And just curious, what is that doing behind the scenes? I mean, what hook do you have that actually takes that statement and does something with it?
Well, /r is actually, so Roslyn, which is this technology that I was mentioning that brings a script authoring model. And what's interesting about, just to take a slight segue, and, you know, this could end up being the whole show. No, I'm just kidding. the Roslyn has really been focused on ID type experiences, like giving you the ability to analyze. You can, it's compiler as a service. So you can take code, you can rip it apart into like an AST and manipulate it. And you can emit code dynamically and a bunch of other stuff. And it gives you really rich IDE integration. So you could do things like ReSharper folks, like make it easy to build tools that analyze your code and syntax highlight them and do all this other stuff. What's interesting about ScriptCS is it looks at using Roslyn from a completely different angle of, hey, let's just use that script ability and let's just separate it completely from the IDE. And fortunately, because Roslyn ships as a set of NuGet packages, you don't need to actually have Visual Studio or any of that installed to use it. So Pound R is actually part of the Roslyn spec. There's actually the CSX spec. So you'll notice when you use ScriptCS that the extension is .csx. And that is an extension that the Roslyn team created, but they actually created a spec because there's some language extensions in there, like the idea that you can write code without a class. Standard C# doesn't support that. You have to have a class. But with Roslyn, you can just write procedural code. So Pound R actually comes directly from Roslyn, and the Roslyn engine is taking care of that for us today. But of course, you can implement it yourself. All it is a syntactic sugar that goes and finds the reference.
So that was, as you're talking about, the way that things are kind of pulled in. And one thing I noticed, like the way I installed this going through scriptcs.net, the information there was with Chocolatey, and then before even creating a script or doing anything, the REPL popped up. And so I just, tried, hey, I'll, var, foo equals 5 and then console.writeline and it works. I guess it's, is that the kind of the simplest way to get started? How does that REPL thing work?
Yeah, that is very new. So kudos to the Roslyn team. I was able to crack the first prototype of the REPL out in about 20 minutes. And then it took about 5 hours to get it fully integrated into everything we had. Roslyn really comes with all the capabilities to do a REPL. So people looked at it and they oohed and they awed. But in reality, that was just me packaging up some APIs that Roslyn already had and putting them together to create a REPL experience. The REPL now is a very easy way to get going with ScriptCS because, as you said, and that was also very heavily influenced from Node. Node.exe, you type Node, suddenly you're in the Node REPL and you can just type stuff. And you can even require modules and things like that. So with ScriptCS, just type ScriptCS and you can just start going to town. We have some default using statements there. But what's really nice with ScriptCS is the NuGet integration. So if any of the callers go and install ScriptCS through Chocolatey, they could go into a folder and do scriptcs-install and type a package. Like the common one I do is I take MongoDB, do scriptcs-install MongoDB. That installs the MongoDB package from NuGet. We basically call out to the NuGet APIs. And put it into a packages folder for you. And then you can just type scriptcs and automatically those packages will get discovered and loaded into the REPL. So then what you can do is type using MongoDB and you won't get an error because suddenly it's just there. So that's a really, I think the REPL is a great on-ramp experience to just start playing around. Plus, I think it's great for those cases where, like, it's the bare minimum way to say, hey, I just want to write some code and see what the instant result is. Or, like the MongoDB case of where, hey, I just want to use the Mongo client and make a call. I don't want to have to write code to then run that code to see it get to a state. With the REPL, I actually get progressive state. So, I can create some objects, run some code, then I can write some more code. And it's a really nice, it's not that ScriptCS is the first one, obviously, to introduce a REPL. There have been REPLs for a long time. And Mono has a great, great REPL as well. But I think what ScriptCS has that's different from a lot of the other solutions that are out there, and it's what has attracted people, is that bridge to NuGet, this command line experience combined with packages.
So Roslyn is still, has been for quite some time, and is still in CTP form.
Yep.
So what are the implications of that as far as, like, you know, the production readiness of this thing and the distribution and all that sort of stuff? And what is the plan for bringing Roslyn in, you know, out into, so into the real world?
Those are good questions, and some of them I can answer well, and the others I'll have to punt on a little bit. But so Roslyn is a CTP. It doesn't have a Go Live license on it. What that basically means is you can't package up the Roslyn binaries and ship them. The license doesn't allow that. You can't really ship a product that ships directly, like with Roslyn binaries. That's not allowed. But what you can do, and this is why it works well for ScriptCS purposes, is Roslyn has packages on NuGet. So, you know, you can basically, like when you use something like Chocolaty, it's basically using NuGet to pull down on your machine those DLLs. So that's actually okay. The question about how stable is it? It's evolving. There are things that are not there. For example, like it doesn't have async await yet in the external, in the public CTPs. It doesn't have dynamic in the public CTPs. And that has definitely hit people playing around with ScriptCS. It will be evolving. It is on a train to ship. There's a lot of people that are heavily invested in it. So I don't think it's a case of it's not going to ship. It's just a question of when. But yeah, you should expect that things will change. I don't think there's any breaking changes coming, but there may be bugs. There are bugs now in the CTP we've had to work around. I guess what I can touch on is that ScriptCS actually no longer takes a dependency on Roslyn. And what I mean by that is there's ScriptCS, the EXE, and there's a ScriptCS API that ScriptCS calls. And that just depends on a script executor. We have an implementation of that for Roslyn, but ScriptCS itself doesn't actually take any hard dependencies on the Roslyn script executor. So, you know, somebody could write a Codedome executor, for example, and there've been talk about people doing that in the short term to get around some of the limitations that we have with Roslyn. But Roslyn has some big benefits that you won't have in the Codedome version.
We have a ton of questions from Twitter. And I think you just answered one. One was from Anthony Vanderhorn of the Glimpse Project. Wanted to know if ScriptCS is dependent on Roslyn, what happens if Roslyn never moves beyond CTP? And you kind of just answered that by saying there's other things that could be plugged in.
Yep. And if the question's not there, there's another type of engine that people are going to build. But I'll wait to see if the question comes. And if not, I'll tell you about it.
Sure. And before we go through some of these other questions, just real quick to give people maybe a more of a feel of what the potential is here. What are some of the common use cases, or what are some of the interesting things that you see people doing with ScriptCS?
So one really cool one. So we added the ability to include files so that you could basically have, you know, one script that then includes other scripts. And as soon as you start to try to build like an app, this hits you. So for example, we have a sample. We have a GitHub repo of samples. So you can go to github.com/scriptcs. All of this is open source, by the way, Apache 2. We've got a lot of active contributors and more coming on every day, which has been great. So we have this ScriptCS samples repo. And if you go in there, you'll see there's a WPF calculator sample. So this is like an app, so to speak, using MVVM, actually, and it really takes advantage of it. I know that when MVVM was being kind of, you know, when people were really getting into MVVM, they weren't thinking about ScriptCS at all. But it turns out that because MVVM doesn't really require designer files and other kinds of things, it works really well for a non-project-oriented kind of environment. So if you go in there, you'll see that there's a full-fledged calculator app in WPF. There's a XAML file. It's loose XAML. There's a view model, which is just script. And there's a little bit of logic around that. So that one I think is really cool because it's just different. It's just kind of like people's brains, they look at it. And I think about how I've built a lot of little harnesses and things. And you could imagine this saying, hey, if you want to build a harness, but you want some type of simple UI, you can actually do that. So that one is a really interesting one. So that covers apps. There are people that are looking at ScriptCS from the, I just want to prototype or write very simple apps and get going. And there's a whole bunch of people that are looking at ScriptCS for that. Then there's other people that are looking at ScriptCS from an automation perspective. They almost look at it like an alternative to PowerShell. I'm a .NET developer. I write C# code. This wasn't why I set out to build it, but and it's not just me anymore, but I was kind of the initial catalyst for it. But there's if you go into our samples, you'll see that there's a guy who wrote this really cool library called Fluent Automation. And Fluent Automation is a library for doing like Selenium testing, and it's a Fluent API in .NET. And he saw what we were doing. He's like, oh, it'd be perfect to do this in Script.cs. So he just wrote a sample that shows you how you could take his Fluent Automation library, and it flows very well for a script kind of scenario. And you just basically copy his app and do Script.cs-install, so it installs the Fluent Automation package. And then a second later, it runs a bunch of Selenium tests on your machine. So that's a place where, that's another example, is kind of automation. There's a real world example. So there's a guy, Kyle Roach, who works at this company, Rush Enterprises, and they're like a very big truck distributor, or they sell trucks. They're one of the largest, they are the largest in the country. And they've got a lot of jobs, like they need to process large amounts of data. And they write these data jobs and data processing jobs. And they found that, you know, they're paying a lot of friction to have projects and compile and all of that. They want to be able to be very agile and make changes to these things quickly, and they just work. And so his company's really gotten all over Script.cs. He presented it. He's in a senior place in his company, and he presented it, and the management really liked it. And, you know, so they've got a bunch of developers who've now moved to using Script.cs for that. Another automation scenario is there's a product out there, Octopus Deploy, by Paul Stovell, which is a really cool deployment tool. It's a paid tool that's out there. And the standard for a lot of these tools, like Chocolaty, even NuGet, is to have PowerShell scripts. And so he has PowerShell scripts, but he saw Script.cs and he was like, hey, you know, it'd be really cool if I could just let people write scripts as C# script and still be able to leverage NuGet and all that other stuff. So he basically introduced support for Script.cs in Octopus Deploy. And one of the interesting things about script, and one of the things you get once you have C# script, is because you're really just mashing up all these different script files, it lets you do some really interesting things. Like in the case of Octopus Deploy, he needs a way to pipe some environment information that'll be available in your code when you write your code. Well, all he did was a very simple pattern of having like a loader script that basically first loads up a file where he puts some variables and stuff that he sets in there that's specific to the particular environment that you're in. And then those just become ambient objects that are available to you within your script. So it's like a loader script that loads two scripts. It loads one, which is the one that has these settings, kind of like a config thing, and the other, which is your script. And he says, hey, name whatever your, you know, whatever script you're going to use, just name it like load.cs, whatever the name is, you know, startup, whatever name he used. So that's really interesting idea. Then with the REPL, I think you have a lot of people that just want to tinker and use it to, for example, Azure Mobile Services. Philip, one of our coordinators, wrote a library for working with Azure Mobile Services. And he used this thing we have called Script Packs, which I'll come back to. But the idea of it is, if you use Azure Mobile Services, you have this backend service that you usually build a mobile app that talks to it. But at some point, you may want to play with the data or just look at it, examine the data, etc. And so he wrote a little helper. And so you basically could go into the REPL and connect to your Azure Mobile Service and just write little kind of code, or using his client, you could basically write calls against your data and do all of that from within the REPL. So,
you know,
so I think kind of application prototyping and script automation and kind of interactive tinkering are like the big ones that we've seen. The last one, which the Octopus Deploy one kind of touches on, is the extensibility. Like you can imagine, you know, I used to work on MEF. You guys all remember that. You could imagine saying, hey, I want my app to be extensible, but instead of you having to write DLLs and give me binaries, just give me a script. And, you know, using Script.cs as the bridge to allow you to extend that app. So that's another scenario that we've seen people interested in using it for.
In the past, I think people have played around with like embedding little JavaScript engines for that kind of stuff. But this seems like a nice alternative to that.
And that's an important point. So a lot of people look and they say, why this? Why not F sharp? Why not Ruby? Why not Iron Ruby? Why not Node? Why this? Why that? Why that? And my answer to all of those, which was the reason that I built it, is if I'm a C sharp developer and if I'm writing C sharp code all the time, Script.cs gives me a chance to take the things I already know and just have a lighter weight way of working with the language that I know. And there's a grow-up story there, because I think it's very possible that people will start prototyping with Script.cs and then, you know, just to get going and do a little spike. But at some point, they're going to actually, like, build something real in C#, and they're probably going to do it in Visual Studio. So they get to use those same skills, those same libraries. So that's my answer whenever people say that, oh, you know, C# is not a good scripting language, or why not use F#, or why not this, is that, you know, Script.cs is providing you a path, and we've done a bunch of stuff to make the scripting experience a lot more palatable, which we can talk about a little bit later. But yeah.
You know, that whole thing about comparing with different languages, and the PowerShell one comes up a lot, but I've just found the PowerShell feels so different than C#. Like, I'm good at C#. I know the syntax. I know how to read it. I could write it without, you know, IntelliSense or whatever. And PowerShell just doesn't stick in my head at all. And I've tried so many times. And so I think of the idea, you know, like you were mentioning Octopus, but also I know there were questions earlier on about using Script.cs install hooks in NuGet. And I see there's
and Chocolaty both have been suggested, which is kind of meta because we depend on both of those. But
one nice advantage would be, you know, PowerShell is only supported on Windows, whereas if, you know, like it would be possible to get Script.cs, you know, with Mono or whatever, different script hosts, and then you could have NuGet, you know, better NuGet support on other platforms. And but the main thing for me is just I'd be able to write it. Like you were talking about, you know, other things like the grow up story and all that, but it's just every time I have to write any like complex PowerShell, I spend, you know, I have to ramp back up on it again.
No, I totally hear you. And I think, and that is kind of, you know, that is also a very strong sentiment. And I've said that whenever people have given me the arguments, I've just been like, but it's not C#. And there, it sounds like I'm just being, you know, I'm just trying to like get the high road. But reality of it is, at the end of the day, that is a super defining characteristic of what makes this interesting to people, is the fact that it's just the thing that they know. But there are a lot of people that have come out and have also said some of the things that you've said, where they're like, you know, reality-wise, when I go to PowerShell, coming from a developer background, what I really wanted was a place where I could just take my C# code to script. And it kind of lets me do that because I can write commandlets in C# that I can then use from my script. And some people have shown how you can actually compile script in PowerShell. And this guy, Beefarino is his Twitter handle, Jim Christopher, I think, has actually recently written a PowerShell module that lets you talk to Script.cs and even pipe objects back and forth to it, which is, you know, which is pretty interesting. But at the end of the day, I come back to what you said, which is, this is really about being able to just easily leverage the skills that you know. The learning curve is so short. Some of the things that we do, we don't just stop at, hey, you can just use the stuff you know. We do a bunch of things to actually make using C# from script a much more palatable experience. And that's been another big attractor.
So one thing you just mentioned was, you know, you expect people to start doing little experimentations with Script.sharp and then, I mean, it's Script.sharp, sorry, with this, and then turn
it into
real apps.
It's funny you say that, because I've had people that totally, like, disregarded Script.cs because they thought, oh, this is just another Script.sharp type thing. So I didn't think about that when I chose the name.
Anyway, to use Script.cs, you know, and then turn it into a real application. So what is the migration there? Like, what is the – is that a difficult process to convert these little scripts into –
It depends on how much you take advantage of some of the goodness that we've put in to make the language more palatable from script. In particular, I'm talking about these things called script packs, which is this way it really brings a node like require module syntax, which has not existed in C#, into — it doesn't really bring it into the language because it's an API, but at the end of the day the lines become blurry. But it brings you a function that you can call that allows you to load modules very much in a way that you would load them in Node. And it makes frameworks much more palatable. Like if you head over to the scripts, if you go into our repo, you'll see there's this scriptcs-webapi repo. And if you go in there, there's a README. And it shows how you can write a web API app with a simple controller in like 5 or 6 lines of code. Maybe it's 8. But that's enabled through this thing we have called script packs that doesn't require you to use any using statements. The using statements are gone because the script pack puts those in. And it gives you an API, which is just very easy to consume. It doesn't require you to new things up and have to worry about a lot of IntelliSense not being there and which object do I need to create. It very much mimics the module system in JavaScript of where it just gives you an object that has the things that you need. So that, if you use that, which was a feature I wanted to talk about anyway, you know, there's not a great story there. Like if you go now to upgrade to a full C# project, what happens to the script packs? Can I use them? Technically, I can use them because they're just .NET code, but I'd have to write a bunch of code to get to even be able to use them. So I think if you go down that path, you know, you're going to do some refactoring. At the end of the day, it's still just C# code, but there may be a bunch of things that script packs and using scriptcs remove for you that now have to be put back when you upgrade. But, you know, that's just a lot of boilerplate junk. It's not like you should have to do significant rework to get a project to grow up. And we've talked about, and there's actually a repo created, but nothing's been happening there yet, to have a project exporter that could actually create a C# project for you, put all the usings and stuff in, because we know what they are, and actually even let you just continue using the script pack from within your full project, because it's just .NET code, until you decide to refactor it. But that's not there yet. So what I would say is it depends on what you're doing. In general, there's nothing that would stop you from upgrading, but you'll probably have to do, depending on how much you're taking advantage of some of the extra goodness that we provide, there may be a bit of refactoring, and at least until we get this export tool in place.
So does that module system that require stuff, I mean, is that something that could or would make sense in the compiled world? I mean, would there be some way to map that into, you know, into the —
well, it is not script today. So yes, I mean, today when you do require, like you require web API, it's require of T. And this is one of those places, by the way, where script is really interesting because it blows your brain. Like in Visual Studio, if I typed require web API and the web API object was not there, it would not compile. But with script packs, you're referring to things in script that you know will be present at runtime. So if you look at that sample, I can write require bracket web API and just trust that as long as the NuGet package is there, it will work. It will work at runtime. Those script packs are just DLLs, but they do supply some things that won't work well in Visual Studio. Like they supply import statements for your class files. Well, at runtime, that doesn't really make sense. You know, unless you're doing something like Roslyn, you can't just dynamically add import in new things that will just work. So that would be a thing that we would have to do at build time. But the concept of just having this require type syntax and where I get a factory that I can just call on to do stuff for me, I think is something that could become a proper .NET idea. I'm not saying that there's any interest in doing that, but it's a big mental shift from the way we've done things in the past. But there's nothing stopping you from using it. Another interesting variation, though, is people have said, well, what if I just write my script packs as script? And that's where this whole other interesting place, which we've not gone to yet, but we might go to in the future, is this idea of script modules, where modules can have dependencies on other modules and where versioning gets very close to kind of what you get in a dynamic language world, even though you're statically typed, because you're no longer depending on a binary dependency. You're depending on a script dependency, which just has to match in terms of shape and form. So it's almost like duck typing, but it's not duck typing. That's a really meta thing, but it's an interesting pattern that we see more and more emerging of this idea of breaking some of the constraints of static typing, even though we're a static language, through using some of these, script type models.
So one of the really interesting things about the Node module system is this ability to eliminate the conflicting dependency problem.
Yep.
Where, you know, if I rely on module A,
yep,
and I rely on module B, A and B can both rely on different, yep, versions of module C. Is that so, something that you get with
you don't today, but that is something that if we go down the path we're thinking of with script modules, that will be possible, which would be pretty amazing. Now, again, it won't be possible. It's really interesting because the CLR actually has now enabled this. In the newer versions of the CLR and the newer versions of the runtime, you actually can have a new level of side-by-side that wasn't possible before. Apparently, PowerShell actually leverages this, but you have to implement it. It's like the seeds are there to allow it. It's not well understood by many people, but you can actually you're actually able to have something that couldn't have before, which is two different versions, and you can control the mapping of which one gets which. It's actually now possible, but we're not taking advantage of it in Visual Studio or any of that stuff yet. It's just there for like PowerShell, like I said, uses it. But with the scripts, you'll be able to do it. Like, we'll be able to say, hey, if you've got a dependency on a script, you could technically say that this one has a dependency on this version and this one has a dependency on this version. And the way that will work is we would just lay out the different versions in a folder system versioned, where we would basically have like this.1 and this.2 or whatever the versions are. We'd have to figure it out, but it's conceptually possible. Is it worth it? I'm not so sure. I think the idea of script modules and modules depending on modules, there's been a basic sentiment that I've heard that yes, that kind of makes sense. Going further than that into actually like where I have one script depending on a different version of a script module, I think it's definitely conceptually possible to support it, but is it really worth it? I don't know. And our thinking about those script modules, by the way, is they come down through NuGet. So we get to leverage NuGet and all of its versioning. We don't reinvent the wheel and create yet another package system. We just imagine that you'll have NuGet packages that have no DLLs and just have content files. And in this case, those content files will be a folder that has a script module in it. And that script module could even have dependencies on other script modules. That's the idea. Now the further we go down that path, the more it does conflict with this idea of, oh, I could simply just upgrade my project. And we're kind of at this point, I think we're seeing with Script.cs, where we're like, we can open up a whole bunch of new scenarios that are going to be very interesting in terms of just kind of almost like we're progressing part of the language in a way. But there's that question of, you know, do we, and what are the implications of doing that? And what does that break?
So I asked you today, as I was playing with this, I ran into a bunch of bizarre feature requests and stuff. And as I was asking you about that, a lot of it, you several times said, you know, we wouldn't want that in the core, but that might be interesting as, you know, as an extension. What are some of the extensibility points? You talk like about script packs, and then there's, you know, potential for extending the REPL, or, I mean, where can you plug in and change things without, you know, messing with that core?
Sure. You can change the engine. So we have a script hosting library. So if you don't want to use scriptcs.exe at all, but you just want to pull in the ability to execute scripts with NuGet packs, we actually have a NuGet package called scriptcs.core, and that has all that functionality. You don't need the CLI. We have script packs. That's like the uber extensibility point for bringing in any kind of third-party framework or API. We have the general extensibility of NuGet. I mean, script packs is really just a special case of a NuGet package. So you can bring any NuGet package in, including script packs. We have plans to allow you to plug in your own commands into the REPL. Now, for that, we're thinking about having actually global NuGet packages that are part of Script.cs itself, because right now, it's very much kind of the node model of like, hey, you just install some NuGet packages for your app. But maybe those are the kind of things that feel almost like node global modules. So we may have a notion of kind of a global place where you can just put packages that are just really always there for Script.cs itself. And so one of the things that we would allow you to do, but we don't yet, is to extend the commands of the REPL. Write your own commands. You filed an interesting bug today, John, to allow you to extend the commands of the command line tool itself. Mm-hmm. Like you had a great idea of, which other people have brought up the idea, but you thought about it from a different angle of like, hey, I'd like to just bring a gist in. This one keeps coming up. And even though initially I was against it, like it keeps coming up. So it's inevitable that it's going to happen. So that extensibility point is needed. We don't have it yet. And we have, like I said, we have the engine's extensibility point. We'll be opening up a bunch of things soon to make it a lot more pliable. And we've tried to kind of, you know, this is, I think, emulating a bit of what the Node core team did. Now, I'm not comparing Script.cs to Node in that way, but I think there's learnings that we have to try to keep things very small. So we've been pretty disciplined about what we've pulled in, and we've made some exceptions. I think the Node team has probably done a better job of being much more disciplined than we are. But we've really tried to say, you know, let's keep to the core and let's have everything else be like an add-on. So we've got a bunch of questions. Let's move forward.
Ah, yes, questions. Questions from Twitter. We have lots of questions. Jeff Schumacher wants you to compare the startup and runtime performance versus a compiled application.
Runtime performance is really no different. Once it compiles, they're just DLLs. The compile performance, Roslyn itself is a lot faster than something like the Codedome because it can compile completely in memory. By default, we compile completely in memory. Now, we do have some weird startup issues that we need to debug, but they're not. And part of that is because, like, initially we had a bunch of startup issues because we would have to unpack the binaries out of the NuGet packages and put them in a bin folder. So we created Script.cs install as a way to not have to do that at load time. There is a bit of a delay depending on the machine you're on. I've seen a bit of a delay when it first runs the first time. I think that's a point in time thing. It's just either bugs or it might be some Roslyn stuff. I don't think it is. I think it's just stuff with our code. But the main thing is once your app is compiled and running, it's no different than if you built those DLLs yourself. They're just DLLs. There's nothing magical or special there. And there's no implicit performance impact just by the presence of Script.cs. There has been an idea of people being able to dynamically load modules kind of on demand, and then those getting loaded into the DLL, so to speak. And that, if we use that, could have an impact, because basically Roslyn will have to create a new DLL on the fly. We haven't gone there yet. So at this point, I'd say once you're compiled, the runtime performance is no different.
All right. Akeem Boyko, apologies for any mispronunciations. Couple questions here. One, is it possible to use this without Roslyn and in sandbox mode? Oh, also wants to know about support for dynamic and async await.
Okay. So we don't depend on Roslyn, as I mentioned. Today we use Roslyn out of the box, but we have an engine that's pluggable. And this is one of the places this is really interesting is for the Mono folks. So Dale Reagan is actually in the midst of porting, creating a Mono version of our engine. So you'll be able to use this at some point soon on Mono. So we'll not be dependent on Roslyn. Somebody could also go write a Codedome engine, which there has been talk about, which I mentioned, but nobody's done anything there. So as far as async await and dynamic, I can't tell you when that's coming, but it is coming. This is one of the reasons why people have said, let's do a Codedome engine, so we don't have to deal with that. But one of the things that you'll lose there is Roslyn allows you to just do loose functions. And that's not supported in the Codedome. So we would have to minimally pre-parse the code and create kind of these classes, outer classes, to make that work for the Codedome, which we don't want to do, but we could. But yeah, there was another part to that question. What was the other part?
Related to sandbox mode.
So I don't know what he means by sandbox. So we don't have app domain isolation, if that's what he's asking about. What we do have is we have a hosting API, and if you use that hosting API and you want to load it up within a separate app domain, you definitely could do that. But there's no implicit, I mean, it's just really compiling a DLL for you. There's in memory. So there's no sandboxing there. Now, when you run with scriptcs.exe, you're obviously hosted in a separate process. So if you run three instances of that, each one is running in its own isolated process, and there's no shared state or anything like that. But if you use the library and you load it up within an application, like for extensibility, it's going to be within the same app domain. It's not going to be in a separate app domain unless you deliberately put it in a separate app domain.
All right. Simon Kropp wanted to know if Script.cs supports plugging into the build pipeline, specifically something like github.com/fody, which is an IL Weaver
So Roslyn may support that. Script.cs doesn't really have a build pipeline. It does a few things. And this is an interesting question of should we allow you to plug in there? Like, we have a parser. We support this pound load, which loads files up. And we actually have to do that. That's a pre-parsing. So that's one place that could impact your startup time a little. If you have lots of files, we basically have to load all those things up and merge them into a big file. And we've talked about how we could possibly make that be better, like save a cache DLL or something like that and recreate it whenever you modify the files. So I don't know if Roslyn might have that ability. I mean, it does let you get Roslyn from an API perspective, if you work with it, does allow you to kind of get access to the whole syntax tree and you can manipulate it. We don't surface that to you currently. If we get feedback that people want to get direct access to it, we could think about how to surface that for the people that want it. But there's no, even our own pipeline, and like I said, we do have a little pipeline, that's an interesting thing to think about, of should we allow you to plug custom steps in, like when we parse scripts, if you wanted to add your own tokens, for example, like we have pound load, what if you wanted to add, you know, pound foo or something like that? Could you? That's an interesting question, and not one I think we've thought about, but we could think about it if there's interest. And this is a open source project, of course, so anybody could come and suggest an idea.
Sure. A few questions out there revolving around how this compares to some existing tools like Snippet Compiler, LinkPad, CS Script.
Okay. So I'm not the expert on all of these. I've only taken a glance at CS Script, which I know has been out a while. I think the big difference between CS Script is the whole NuGet thing, the way we've done NuGet. I think also the includes. I'm not sure if CS Script has includes, but maybe it might. But I think the NuGet is a big part of it. Also supporting, which Roslyn brings to the table, you know, just procedural script where I don't need to have a class. So that would be, I'd say, one difference. As far as the other one you mentioned was LinkPad, which I've not used a lot of, but I've been hearing about it forever, and I think I've played with it a few times. My main thing that I understand about LinkPad is, so Script.cs, you know, I mentioned like automation or building full-fledged apps. I think LinkPad tends to be more of, and please correct me if I'm wrong, tends to be more of an interactive, closer to kind of the REPL, only richer. Like it has a really nice UI for, you know, you can do a query and get results, but you can do way more than that. You can write code, but it really lends itself towards a very rich interactive style experience, where I think that the REPL, although interesting for Script.cs, the real strong point for Script.cs is being able to write these multi-file kind of apps that use NuGet packages that are written in script.
Very good. I think there's just two more Twitter questions that I have that we haven't really addressed. Well, this one I guess we sort of have, but Dan Vanderboom wants to know if Script.cs will let you run a .cs code file by itself anywhere in the file system.
Today, no. It does not do that. We've really taken a attachment to the Roslyn CSX file format, which supports some things that standard C# doesn't. I think ultimately Roslyn will support everything that C# does plus more. So, I mean, if we had enough people asking about that, that's certainly something we could try. Although I think in practice, like, you might as well just write a CSX already, because so much of the standard C# workflow today is built around Visual Studio and a project system. And the big thing that Script.cs brings to the table is an ability to bring multiple files together without needing a project, and bring references together without needing a project, which are key things that project files do for you today. So I just don't know how useful it's going to be. You know, you're going to find a C# file that maybe has a dependency on some other part of your app, and it's not there. I'm skeptical that even if we supported it, that it would buy you much. But the answer today is we don't support it. I mean, you could try to rename it to a CSX. I guess we would load it if it didn't have a CSX extension. So it might work, actually, if you specify, because you do specify the full file name, and I don't know that we're filtering if it doesn't have CSX. But what will be the net result of how well that will actually work? Like if you have an entry point, for example, we don't look for the entry point. So that right there is not going to play. We don't automatically say, oh, is this class have a main? We expect that there's some procedural code there that will instantiate objects. So, yeah, I'm not sure it makes much sense.
All right. And one more from Tomasz Jędrzejczyk. That one right.
Tomasz.
Sorry.
Yes.
John will edit that.
Yep.
When will integration of Script.cs and Edge.js be done?
Right. And the reason he's asking this is because this is assigned to me and I accepted it, that I would do it. I hope within the next week this will be done. And Tomek has kind of said, you know, he's kind of ready to find somebody else to do it, even though I volunteered to do it. An interesting history, I don't know if Tomek mentioned this, but both Edge and Script.cs were pretty much born like around the same week on the same team, even though it's not team projects. But Tomek and I were both looking into this kind of using C# from different angles. And both of those had to do with actually Azure Mobile Services, where we both work on. And I was looking at how can we have a really lightweight authoring experience on par with what we have in JavaScript. And out of that investigation is what led to Script.cs. And he was looking at, well, how can we enable people to use C# code with our existing Azure Mobile infrastructure? And thus Edge was born. And so the two of us have been like, you know, going back and forth with each other and giving each other ideas and watching each other on GitHub. We're kind of neck and neck on watchers continually. But
and for those that haven't heard about Edge, you can basically call into C# code from Node.
It's an interop. It's not just for C#. Somebody's done an F# doing an F# bridge as well. But it's a way to bridge from Node to .NET. And that was the last show that I think you guys had.
Yep.
Of course, yes.
So, yes, hopefully the Edge Script.cs integration will come because it makes sense. I'll give you a perfect example. I did a prototype of using Edge to talk to Azure Media Services using the .NET SDK. Because this is a great example of a library that we don't have implemented in Node yet. And to do that, I need to use NuGet packages and a bunch of other stuff. So rather than, you know, Tomas having to reinvent the wheel and start implementing a lot of the stuff that we've done, which he doesn't support today, it's like, well, if you could just bridge to Script.cs, then I could do that Azure Media Services example and just specify in a packages.config that I want Azure Media Services, and then it will just download it through NuGet for me, and it'll just work. So I think the integration actually makes a lot of sense if you buy into the things that Edge is bringing to the table. And so either I'll do it or somebody else will do it, and I'll give them a couple of pointers if they run into any problems, hopefully within the next week.
So I had a question as I was going through today was, you know, like, of course I did something wrong. I didn't follow directions closely enough and I wasn't running my command prompt as admin, right? So all my server scenarios were all failing. And so you talked me through that, but that led me to think about, you know, like, what's the debugging and logging scenario? And I looked and there is good logging support.
There's debugging too.
Okay. So, and to do that, I did the dash debug and it kind of output the exception call stack, right?
Well, so the way you do it, you weren't necessarily doing it the way you're supposed to do it. not your fault. There's a wiki if you go to the wiki. The way the debug works is you actually go into Visual Studio, and a lot of people don't know this, but I will teach you a tidbit. In Visual Studio, you can do file open and point to an exe. A lot of people don't know this. Like, no project, your exe is your project. People have done the trick of creating a DLL and setting the exe as the startup, but you can actually open an exe. And if you open an exe into VS, and I believe you need to have the Roslyn CTP for this, because Hanselman had a problem when we tried it without it. So you install the Roslyn CTP, which actually gives you some Visual Studio extensions. You go into Visual Studio, you open the exe, and when you open an exe, it gives you kind of a specialized project that's tailored for launching that exe. You right-click on the exe, and then you get a screen where you can set properties. And so what you do is you set the startup command to be script.cs. You point it to where script.cs is located. You can set the working folder. And then you do dash debug, and you do the name of your file that you're starting, like start.csx, and you do dash debug. And then you bring all of the script files into Visual Studio by like adding to solution. And once you do that, you actually can put breakpoints and step through the script.cs code, which is pretty awesome. It's not as great of an experience as it needs to be because it doesn't yet do syntax highlighting for things that are brought in through script packs because it doesn't know about script packs. And we think that there's a way we'll be able to get that to work. But there is a debugging story, and that is one way to debug. The other way to debug is there's a tool out there, which I didn't even know existed, called MDBG, which was part of like the original .NET SDK. And it gives you like a console debugger that also has a GUI. So both of those ways are possible. And just on this topic, somebody recently did a script pack that allows you to use this new library that Microsoft put out, which is a diagnostics library that's kind of like WinDBG or Son of Strike. it allows you to, from Script.cs, connect to an application and debug it from the console, which is pretty cool. Anyway,
awesome.
Did that answer?
It did. The one other thing is, you know, I know there's like a huge amount of value, and I was very happy to be, you know, just very lightweight REPL, you know, like outside of creating the project. And yet, of course, with C#, you know, there's that kind of muscle memory and dependence on IntelliSense. And, you know, I know there's like Sublime support, but that doesn't have like, you know, real IntelliSense where it's inspecting, you know.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I guess the answer is I should just man up and write the code. I mean, there's no real.
Well, not exactly. So there's a guy, his Twitter handle is Kellang, K-H-E-L-L-A-N-G. He's been very active contributing. He's actually creating a lightweight, I don't want to call it IDE, because one of the big goals of Script.cs is not to need an IDE. He's creating an editor that will support syntax completion, a lightweight WPF editor that will actually support syntax completion. It's not impossible, by the way, to get that in Sublime. It just would be a bunch of work, but it's not impossible to do. I don't know if anybody will man up to do that one. I'm certainly not stepping up to do that one. But I think with the work that Kellang is doing, that you will actually end up seeing something coming. But, you know, it may be that if you get to the place where you really need the IntelliSense, you should just be doing it in Visual Studio. Like, I think I think there are some people that will try to go as far as possible with Script.cs, and they'll be willing to bear with it. But I think there certainly is a sweet spot beyond which, you know, either due to scope of application or complexity or whatever, that maybe it's not the right thing. And that's perfectly okay. I'll be very happy if Script.cs helps a whole bunch of people some of the time rather than helping everybody all the time, because it doesn't need to be this magic hammer that you use for everything.
Mm-hmm. And those script packs take away most of that. You know, they simplify the hard scenario. So then what I saw with the little playing around with that idea, that if there was a script pack available, I didn't really have to write much code. You know, I mostly just commanded the script packs.
Exactly. And you'll see that people are implementing script packs for all the different kinds of libraries. And what's really nice about that one is, because it's literally just a NuGet pack, it's open to anybody to do one. You don't need permission from anybody. Just go write a script pack and put it out there. And, you know, you may just use it for yourself just to make your own life easier. But while you're doing it, you want to make it useful for others. By the way, Christian Hellang, and I would not be doing any justification, by the way, without talking at least about my two other key coordinators, which is Philip Wojciechowski, Philip Waj on Twitter, Philip_Waj, and Justin Rusbach. Philip had done a bunch of work with Rosalind before I built this project. And when I built it, I looked, said, hey, look at it. And he's like, oh, this is awesome. And fortunately, he jumped in. And Justin Rusbach had built this really cool thing called Compilify.net, which is like a JS fiddle for .NET, which uses Rosalind. And this project would not be where it is without their help. I mean, they've just been amazing. The smartest decision I ever made after, you know, putting this out there was somehow convincing those guys to work on the project, because they have done so much work, and, you know, they're just amazing. My hat's off to them. And we've had some great contributors too, like Damian Schenkelman, who did our debugging story. I mean, he just did an amazing job just spiking it out and figuring out how to get debugging working. And Christian Hellang has done a bunch of stuff, and Jonas Falasso has done the Sublime Text plugin, and we've just had an amazing community pop up in the last 3 months around this project. And I want to put my hat off to all of them.
So since it seems like a lot of people are interested in this project as sort of an alternative to PowerShell, are there features that you are thinking about that make it more shelly, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. At this point, I mean, we have had, you know, I was mentioning Guy Jim Christopher, who did integration to allow you to call Script.cs from PowerShell, which he didn't have to change Script.cs, which was nice. He just did that as an add-on. I think the REPL and being able to do stuff in the REPL is going to be a big thing that, once that extensibility opens up, will be very popular. As far as Script.cs, well, what do you have in mind, I guess?
I don't have anything in specific. I mean, like, piping is like is one thing, I guess, that, you
so
know.
So piping. Okay, so let me tell you one thing we are doing. We don't have a good story today for passing command line arguments. So in Node, right, Node, you install, you know this, Kevin, you install a global module. What do you get? It's just a script that parses args and sits in a global place. We actually have a really bad story today for if you want to pass your own optional arguments in that actually go to the script. So let's say you wanted to actually do the equivalent of global modules in Node with Script.cs, where I can install a script and it basically becomes a command line tool. I have some syntactic sugar that generates a CMD file, which calls it and makes it look like a command line tool. You can't do that today. That's coming. So we're going to make it that pull request is even in already. And Scott Blumquist, who's from MS OpenTech, actually did this, which was kind of cool because somebody from Microsoft who's contributing back. You're going to be able to have optional arguments. So you can create little command line tools. And I think that will be very attractive. And as far as piping, you'll be able to pipe text, of course, like you could do now. Whether we get into piping of objects between, I mean, maybe if you were using these in PowerShell, you could take advantage of the PowerShell pipeline for piping. If we see an attraction for that, we'll do it. It will definitely be an add-on because we don't want to break Mono. I mean, I think Mono's got a tremendous potential here if once we get the Mono version. But yeah, I mean, we'll certainly keep our eye out on that. And it's an open project, so, you know, people can come with ideas and, you know, we'll have the hard decision of whether we want to bring something into the core or not. But I think the command line enhancement with arguments is going to be a big thing, actually. You'll see lots of utilities that will start to pop up that will just be Script.cs scripts.
You know, one thing maybe that I don't know if this fits onto that or not, but one thing I was thinking about utility-wise is that I've got a few auto hotkey scripts, and they're just very simple little scripts to, you know, convert when I type this, do this, but more importantly to like one like controls my it mutes my microphones and stuff. And I was thinking like would it work to write some TSR like startup scripts that just kind of watch for something and do something?
Sure. I mean, it's .NET code, right? So once it's compiled, it's no different than you had written that thing as a DLL. So, I mean, that one of the reasons why we wanted the hosting library was to support those kind of scenarios. But I think we're also going to get to a place. I mean, I see the day coming where you'll be able to run like Script.cs dash, I don't want to call it dash build, but, you know, dash save or something, and you'll be able to get DLLs if you want.
I mean, that's part of the thing, auto hotkey, you can do that, write a script and then compile it. Like,
yep, it's coming. And I don't see it as bad as long as that doesn't become that you have to do it. There's something people really like. So today we have to do this build when you do this dash install because we thought there was a bug in Roslyn that was preventing us from loading the binaries right from within the package folders where they extract. So we copy them all to a central folder when you do this dash install. It doesn't really get in the way, but it's like a lot of people look at it and like, why do I have to do that? Very soon you won't have to. Very soon you'll be able to just install the packages and we will run the binaries right in the same folder where the packages live. So we won't have to do any copying. And yeah, the saving of a DLL is totally supported in Roslyn. We just haven't gone down that route yet, but we very well most likely will.
So Glenn, where's all this headed? What are some of the other things that you haven't mentioned yet that might be coming up in the future?
That's a good question. So, I mean, I mentioned the big one, which is the Script.cs modules. Another idea we've got floating around is a concept of aliases. Now, this really gets into uncharted territory. So imagine you could alias APIs that you're using in C#, for example, to come up with your own names. And maybe you can ship those aliases actually as a NuGet package so that other people who want to depend on your tool could use the aliases. Now, that is a very controversial one because that goes way out of anything that Roslyn or anybody else supports. And we can do it because we're pre-processing. Like, we can have regexes that find foo and turn it into bar or whatever. So that's an idea that's out there. Same thing with in the REPL. In the REPL, it's probably a lot easier, but we're having aliases, right? Like, I have to do console.writeline. Maybe I just want to do, like, W. And W is a command that's equivalent to console.writeline. You know, what's really cool with this scripting world is the alias can be easier than that. The alias could simply be, we emit a function that calls to that function in the JavaScript, and we don't even have to parse code. So it's really some really interesting things that open up in the script world. So the alias is one that we've heard a lot of. I think we want to eventually have a better Visual Studio experience, like a first class. When I go to debug, I get syntax completion. Roslyn is supported in VS, so it would be nice to be able to just open your app and start working on it in VS if you want to and get IntelliSense and get That would answer, actually, what you want, John. The best story I could imagine would be we actually just get it to work in Visual Studio and we're able to teach Roslyn to give us full syntax completion, like it can do for general CSX stuff. It just can't do it for Roz because it doesn't know about, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that we're bringing in that it just doesn't know about. So the tooling, we need to figure out how to teach the tooling to know about it. That export project thing, I think, will come at some point. I think that's going to become important at some point. We mentioned the saving to DLLs. We mentioned the custom arguments. Everything is in GitHub issues, so you can browse GitHub issues. There have been a bunch of people that are just coming up with really, I don't want to call it wacky, but interesting stuff. So there's a guy named Adam Ralph who's been, he wrote the Nancy script pack, and he's come with a bunch of Rubyist ideas, you know, like making it so that I could have like equivalent to debug.assert in my script, and it breaks in the REPL. You know, like you run it with script.cs, and it hits like a debug.assert, and then it just brings me into the REPL as like a pop-up where I could just start typing stuff. That's, you know, a bunch of these are going to be things that are only going to happen if the community steps up, because we just don't have the time to do it, and, you know, may not even have the inclination to do it. So what's really cool is we do have like 20 contributors right now active, and that means we can get a bunch of stuff done if people want to. So those are kind of the major ones, I think. There is this looming VB thing floating around, and there have been people who've said, I want to do F sharp. So I have this joke of like, although CS stands for C sharp, it could easily be changed to stand for compiler services. And there definitely are people that are interested from other language perspectives. And with the pluggable engines, there's nothing standing in the way, although we might have to change some of our parsing to support that. Anyway, that kind of gives you the high-level big bucket items that I think we're thinking about at this point. I guess one other thing I could say is I do have a personal interest in seeing if some of the product teams at Microsoft do take an interest in this. And I have seen some that are. And saying like, oh, well, we want to add a script experience, say, to something like HD Insight. And yeah, we're going to support JavaScript and we'll support Java. Maybe it'll be cool that I could write my MapReduce jobs, say, in script.cs. I definitely have an interest there in seeing if there are teams that will pick it up. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think there's a lot of places where it could bring value. One interesting debate question that comes up, though, and we probably won't have time to answer or really discuss it, is this kind of project that Microsoft should have done? Like, should the Roslyn team have done it, or should this team have done it? And I feel like no. Like, I feel like the Roslyn team and the platform team can fill the gaps, and like we shouldn't have to go implement async await. But I think the thing that is really exciting people here is the fact that they don't have to be dependent on, you know, what Microsoft does to move forward. There's just a ton of features that we have that probably would not be there if this was, you know, just a sole Microsoft effort. But, you know, of course, there's debate back and forth on the merits of that.
What about yourself? Do you have anything exciting coming up? Any speaking, any appearances?
Public speaking engagements. I've done some really interesting talks recently. I was in Codemania in New Zealand, which was a fantastic trip. I don't have any big speaking engagements coming. I am planning to attend NodeConf, which is a big node event that'll be coming up in a month or so in the Bay Area. So I'm planning to go to that. I don't have a ton of travel and stuff planned from a work perspective right now. So I'm just going to hopefully relax and enjoy my summer. There may be some big thing, very, very big thing that's coming. And if you watch me on Twitter or watch my blog, you'll hear about that soon. And no, it doesn't mean I'm leaving Microsoft. It is not related to my leaving the company, which is what people think as soon as they hear that. But there is a big life change that might happen, which I don't want to talk about right now. But if you follow my social movements, you'll find out about it, if it happens.
We will look for that. So I think that is just about a show. So Glenn, thank you for being on again.
Thank you guys for having me. This was cool. And it was exciting for me, actually, because I think this is the first time I've been on for something that I'm not working on at work. So that was pretty interesting and fun.
I had a great time. I just want to, you know, like tell people, like, if you're listening to this, give this a shot. You can be up and running in seconds. Like, if you have Chocolaty installed, which you should, then just do CINST scriptcs and like run scriptcs from a command prompt, and you can start. You type some C# code. Like, it's so fast. And I mean, you've got a lot of good walkthroughs and all that. But I mean, I think what you've said about the whole idea of, you know, making it so lightweight and making things easy, and it's like, really the experience is just, like, there's no excuse not to just take a few minutes and play with it. It's great.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Just the one gotcha that you ran into that we should mention is if you're using any of the web framework examples, like you're playing with Web API or Nancy or Simple Data. We have a pack for Simple Data, which Ian Battersby wrote. Thank you very much, Ian. Make sure that you're running as admin. That's not a scriptcs thing. It's just a .NET thing if you want to listen on ports. Which you can actually write, and you'll see many examples of running a little web server that has got, you know, controllers that are defined in script. You need to do that run as admin thing so that you'll be able to listen on the port. And please get involved with the project. GitHub.com/scriptcs is our org, and we have a scriptcs project, and we'd love to see what you guys think, and we'd love to have your contributions either to scriptcs itself or in the form of samples or script packs or blogs or even documentation. So it's very open in terms of, you know, the kind of things that you can do. We'd love to have people help us.
Awesome. We'll be sure to put all the links in the show notes. And excellent. I think that's a show. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you, and I'm sure we'll talk to Glenn again on a future episode of Herding Code.
It was great to be on again, and you guys are awesome, so thank you for having me.
We try.